is the 3rd of November, 1986. And I'm talking to...
Bob Ashawa.
In East Point. So I'm going to play that back and see what it sounds like now.
What?
Well, the first thing I wanted to ask when were you born?
Born July 29, 1939.
And where was that?
13 Mile, Franklin County.
What is 13 Mile?
It's a little fishing village. It was then. It's still there, you know. I think Alan Paul runs it now. You know, just a couple of little places there. But it's a big seafood business, but it's all run down now.
Is that near Appalachia?
Well, it's 13 miles outside of Apalachicola between Appalachian and Indian Pass.
Oh, yeah. Was your family a large family?
Well, you'd call it a large family. It's 13 of us younguns in it.
Big enough.
Two of them passed away, and my mom and daddy, I think it made 15 of us.
Wow.
Two-room house.
What are your parents' names?
Jimmy Lee Shiver is my daddy's name, and which you've met.
Mm-hmm.
And my mama's name, Louise. Mm-hmm. She's remarried, and her name is Louise Coutu.
Mm-hmm.
Married a Canadian.
Oh, yeah. What sort of work did your dad do for a living?
Well, from talking to him when he first eat seafood ever since 31. Up until that, he was in the farming business, you know, with my granddaddy and all. He worked with them.
Mm-hmm. Hi there.
Hi.
Pretty good. Well, what was it like growing up over to 13 Mile?
Well, I don't remember living at 13 Mile. I was born there, and we only stayed there a short time. And we moved. I remember my first being in East Point when I was just a little boy. We lived here, and I went to Georgia for, I can remember there just a little bit. But came back here, and we've been here ever since. My life has been right here in East Point. Right here on this road. But like growing up, I've lived in 11 Mile, which is 2 miles back this side of 13 Mile, and I remember that.
Mm-hmm.
It was closed, and everybody was close, little fishing village with little houses, little huts for people to live in when they migrant workers. We moved from one end of this county to the other. When the origin changed, like when the through the winter, we stayed here, and then the west wind started blowing, through the north wind blow, we went that end.
Mm-hmm.
Then whenever we get down to the west wind blowing, we moved back here because of the oysters being fat,
mm-hmm.
blowing the fresh water back over them and the different substances in the water make them fat. And my daddy, that's the way we lived.
Mm-hmm.
Lived in that little house right down the road, and I remember it great. It was good. Mm-hmm. I love it. I will never forget it.
Mm-hmm.
And I try to talk to my daddy about it all the time, anybody else, and getting input. Anybody else? I love history.
Mm-hmm.
I love history. Better than that for my favorite subject at school.
Mm-hmm.
Knowing how we come about and how we got to be over here in America, I tell you.
Mm-hmm.
But Franklin County has been such a change, and it's been a joy to watch it change.
Mm-hmm.
Being a part of it. Now, I never have been a seafood worker. I never liked it from the day I ever went. All my other brothers are good at it. They love it. They know the trade. I know it,
mm-hmm.
but I don't like it.
Mm-hmm.
I love to be around it and a part
yeah.
of it.
How old were you when you went fishing with your dad?
Now, when I first went, I can't even remember.
Mm-hmm.
But when I do remember, the first works I was doing with him, I was about, I reckon, 6, 7 years old
mm-hmm.
or 8. All of us started young. Taught us to work and work hard, you know, to make a living and make sure that we done it honest.
Mm-hmm.
But I've been working with Daddy ever since I was 7 years old, I can remember. You know, not hard, but then after I got on up and got older, and none of us finished school.
Mm-hmm.
None of us had a high school education. And we always quit and went to work with Daddy because of the big family.
Mm-hmm.
And hit so hard on him and Mama trying to make it for us. It cost everything in the world it could make.
How many brothers and sisters do you have?
I have 7 sisters. No, there were 7 of us boys, 6 sisters.
Mm-hmm.
2 of my brothers passed away. 1 6 months old and 1 got killed accidentally by a shotgun blast
mm-hmm.
in East Point dove hunting.
Mm-hmm.
And the rest of us are healthy and doing fine. Yeah. Now, there's only, I have three sisters here in East Point left and one brother. The rest is in Texas and all around, you know, in Arkansas.
Well, when you were growing up, I don't know if you were like me, I always thought about what I wanted to be, if I wanted to be a policeman or a fireman or this or that, as I learned about other occupations. What kind of thoughts did you have about that as you were getting older?
Well, I knew when I was out there Austin with my daddy, I loved to make music, you know, and loved to sing and stuff like that. And I thought about that for a while, and one of my friends was a musician and played lead guitar, and I thought about that, but that's hard. That's something that hardly ever comes to most people. But I knew I didn't want to work in the bay. I knew that. And I'd be working on one side of the boat, tonguing the oysters with it, and I wouldn't have half the amount on the boat that Daddy would have, and he'd be getting after me. But my mind was thinking, one of these days, I won't have to do this no more. Mm-hmm. I didn't really have no real thoughts on really how much. Now, a mechanic, my dad was a good mechanic. And I thought, well, maybe I can be a mechanic. And I did learn that. My daddy taught me that, and I was the only boy out of the bunch that learned it. I learned that real easy. I couldn't learn to be a good seafood worker. My daddy was good at that. He taught the rest of them, and he learned well. I could not. When it come to working on motors, rebuilding that, I could learn that. I done it, and I loved it, getting into the grease. Mm-hmm. But as I grew up and got on up in my older age, I kept working the seafood. And rebuilding old cars here and there, building a few boats, just little model things. When I was just a kid, we didn't have enough room in the house, so I got some old strips and stuff, and I learned that I could figure in lumber. And I built a little room on the house, and I thought on that. But for as really thinking about any special thing, I figured I'd be in seafood the rest of my life, but not wanting to do it.
Mm-hmm.
So, I got married, and I began to work in seafood, but began to work on houses. I got jobs working with the contractors and building homes and different things, porches. And I got a job working in the local garage here, and for 4 years I worked in that as a mechanic.
Mm-hmm.
And I seen that I couldn't make that. That was too nerve-wracking, and meeting the public on that, trying to make new cars out of junk.
Mm-hmm.
And I couldn't do that, so I got out of that, and I went back to seafood. Now, the part that, when I got to this part, I went back to seafood, my life was taking a drastic change. My family was growing. I didn't want to move out of the old house that I wanted to live like I was raised.
Mm-hmm.
We had a little old house here, trailer house. It was run down, and my yard was about, but it's good now to what it was then. I didn't want to clean it up. I didn't want to clean the palmetters out. I wanted to leave it like it was. Mm-hmm. You're talking about somebody loving staying the way they was raised. Mm-hmm. I'm one of them.
Yeah.
And it's hard to change me overnight. I don't do that. But as my wife, she's raised in a different culture. She was raised in a different whole setting than I was. The home was kept different. Raised in a home with bathrooms on the inside. That was something we never had. Ours was outside of Sears and Roebuck.
Mm-hmm.
And through the little path.
Mm-hmm.
But when I got married to her, there was difference there. She started trying to change me overnight, see, to of course, she wasn't used to living in the kind of environment, the kind of way that we were used to living to. And I told her, I said, just don't try to change me. Not overnight, you can't do it. So 5 years went on, and live that way. I was a great hunter, fox hunter. My daddy taught me that, and he taught me well. He was a great hunter, because he had to hunt for a living during the Depression. Possum, polecats, he dug them out and sold them things, 75 cents a hide, to make a living for his family on the farm up there. But as I began to go on, and while I was working as a mechanic, I got a few boats. People asked me to build them, and I had about like a shade tree mechanic. I built a few boats out there and for just a novel, you know, novelty. And it felt good. And I began to work that wood, and I drifted away from that. But when I went back to seafood after I had went in the mechanic job, my life was beginning to take change, because I'm going to tell you now, this might, you might not want to hear, but my life was without God. I was never taught in my home anything to do with God, anything to do with church. I was taught respect it, believe in it, moral standards, not to steal, cuss, cheat, drink, none of that stuff. Good morals, my daddy taught me that, my mama. But not anything to do with God or church, you know, they just never taught that. But my wife, she was in a church, and this is what changed me into the boat. I'm going to get to the point now to tell you how this come about, mm-hmm. how I believe it come about. I was never pleased with nothing I done, not seafood, not building houses, not building motors. None of this stuff was satisfying to me. I still had that longing for something that I had when I was working on the side of the boat with my daddy. I knew that there was somewhere, someplace, something that I could do that I would be good at, that I'd love. Mm-hmm. So, in 1971, after my brother passed away, which brought a drastic change in my whole thinking, then I was converted to be a Christian, something that was new. And from that day, God gave me the boat building. It happened overnight. Mm. There was a man came to me, and he loved, now the boats was Mr. Lolly, Joe Lolly. You've read of him and heard of him quite often, which is my favorite. He's my idol for his boat builder. Bud Seymour was good. I love him. He builds a good boat, and he stays with the lines that he was taught. Or he wasn't taught. He got that from youth. That man was born with it, as Joe Lolly was. He began to want me to work with him. Joe Lolly did. And I wouldn't do it because I just didn't have enough patience to stay. But he showed me the first linings of this boat on this particular type. Charles Raphael showed me the first boat I built and cut out the original flat bottom skiff that was used traditionally here for oyster boating, which is still the best boat for oyster in this bay, shallow water. But Mr. George Kersey from Carabao came to me, and I was building a house. I was working on a roof, and he wanted me to build one of these V-bottom boats, semi-V, which people called it the Lolly boat. And I said, I can't do it. Well, Leroy Langley sent him to me and said, you can do it. He said, I've got the money here. Mr. Lolly won't build me the boat. I've showed him the money, tried to give it to him. He wouldn't build the boat. And I said, Mr. Kersey, I tell you, I can build a flat bottom boat, the old skiff that works out. He said, I don't want one of them. I want one of them Lolly boats. And he won't build it for me. And this is why I believe God gave me this gift. Because Mr. Lolly turned him down, not knowing that he was coming to me. And I said, Mr. Kersey, if you're willing to waste your money and trust me with it, I'll take your money and do the best I can. It was a 19-foot skiff. I took it in 1971. I took his money and I bought the material. I built the boat. He was pleased with it. Other people looked at it. My brother Kenneth, he wanted one of them, 26-foot. I built that, and they was not up to standard of Mr. Lolly's. They liked a lot in workmanship, the lumber, the cuts, the fits, and all this stuff, and I wanted that. And that's how this come into being with me being in the boat building. I love boats all my life, still love them. I love to watch them come and go out in the bay. I hate to see it go, and don't believe I'll ever see it go completely. I just think I'll see it down to a minimum, you know, down to certain things. It's changed, such rapid change in this county now.
What were the boats like that Mr. Raphael showed you about, these flat-bottom skiffs?
They were made out of cypress, one-inch cypress lumber, and they was cut. The sides on them were cut different. He cut them on thirds, and they was the best oyster boat and I still say they are today. These boats are more durable for rough water, and they look better. The shapes of them, they're beautiful, you know, when they get out there and get painted. The other boats are pretty, too, but they're flat, and they beat hard. They flounce in the water. But he cut them boats on thirds. The first one I ever was in 63, the first one I ever built. was a flat bottom skiff, was 29 foot, I can't remember right one. But Charles Raphael cut it out for me, and he cut that thing on third. It was about the awfulest looking sight I ever seen. When I seen him, I thought he'd rent my lumber.
But what do you mean by cutting it on thirds?
Well, you go from the bow stem to a third of your boat, mm-hmm. and you cut out, I think he cut out 4.5 inches out of that board. Like you come from the tip of the bow, back a third, measure down on your board, I believe it was 4.5 inches. You measure, you take a straight edge, and you come from that point and draw a line. Then you go to a third of the boat again back from the stern, and you come out to a point there. And then you go back. He put rake in his boat. He put, I believe it was 5 inches, 5 or 6. Maybe it was the same amount that he took out of the middle up in the first third. Mm-hmm. And he run a board back there where the boat would raise the bow. When it runs, it wouldn't run with the nose in the water, but it would raise up, and it did it.
Mm-hmm.
It worked fine. Because I finished the boat once he cut it out.
Now, and was this what you're describing to me to get the shape of the...
To get the shape of the bottom.
Of the bottom.
Of the bottom.
Uh-huh.
The bottom came out when it, after you cut this and flare it with the flare was... He had it an 8-on-12 flare.
Need to get that?
She'll get it.
Okay.
And she, I mean, he... Whenever it left the bow to the from that third to this third on the stern, it was completely flat.
Mm-hmm.
But then the back end of it run... It took the belly out of it.
Hmm.
Now, these boats here, I cut, there's probably not even a fourth on a four. I come 64 inches on this particular boat here, 25 foot of this V-bottom boat. 64 inches back, I take out 1.75 inches. I come back to 6 feet back here. You see right here about this timber, you can see a little run over.
Right.
You see it?
Starts to slope back.
Now, that's something that I've changed over the last 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
I did come from 3.75 inches from 64 inches here on a 25-foot boat to the point here. Well, it throwed a little concave here, and it throwed the bow of the boat in the water. It made it push water in the bow. Mm-hmm. Now, these are the changes that I made in the last few years on some of the changes. Now, then I come out the same amount about where I do there. If it's 64 inches, about 6 foot
mm-hmm.
up here. And it stopped. It comes out to a point here. Then that way, when I bend it around, it throws a little right there, comes out to a little about 3/4 inch of rake in it,
mm-hmm.
which picks the bow up and lets it run about, and the water will run out back here.
Mm-hmm.
When it's running, the spray goes behind the boat instead of going on the boat.
Mm-hmm. So, are these measurements ones that you make when you have your whole side panels together mm-hmm. and you're making that cut before
right.
you put them on your stem and your timbers?
Right. Now, see, it's different. Building these boats are different than a jig. If you got a jig or a mold or something like that, you put your timbers up and then you put your wood around it.
Mm-hmm.
These boats are made from four parts. You lay your sides out. You cut it's two pieces of plywood together. I cut it on 22 and 26, and it's not a complete split, you know. It's not a half of a sheet of a 4 foot plywood. It's a 22 inches on the stern, 26 inches on the bow, and I split that, turn it around, put the two big pieces together, and then I cut 7 on 12 on the bow stem, which gives it the pitch on the front,
mm-hmm.
3 on 12 on the stern, on the transom. Some people don't know the stern. You name it transom. That's that modern day speaking, the transom. I call it the stern of the boat.
Yeah.
That's biblical speaking.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, or the transom. But anyway, it's 3 on 12, which gives it a 15 degree angle on the stern, which the outboard motors or the stern drives on Merc cruisers have to have a 13 degree angle.
Mm-hmm.
I make them 15, which makes it perfect. And once I cut that back end and cut the bow of it, then I come back 64 inches on this particular size. Now, it varies on different sizes of boats.
Mm-hmm.
Bigger boats, 28, 20, and 30 foot, 32s, they come for the back, to cut the belly, what I call the belly of it, to keep it from having such a big, bulky belly, you know. You cut out that run, and when you bend it around, you see what's sitting here.
Mm-hmm.
It's got a perfect run to it, and that's what I'm doing now to it is the best running boat that I've ever built.
Hmm.
It lifts the bow and shoots the spray out behind the boat instead of shooting it up in and wetting everybody.
Mm-hmm. Now, when you're when I was here last week, you were putting the sides together, and I was wondering what you did before that I saw last Thursday. You had the stem, and you had the two sides, and I watched you attach the transom there. What had to take place before all that for to get to that point?
Okay, well, I've explained the sides. That's what when I cut the bow stem, I take it out of a 4x4. And that's one of the first pieces I build. And it's a 4x4 cut on a 42-degree angle on my table saw. Then I cut the little piece back, I set my saw back and cut the edge off to make it look neater. You know, you see how it looks, Sean.
Mm-hmm.
That's a 20-degree angle I cut on that to make it, just leave that little flat look. And then I build my transom or my stern board. That's built out of number 2 pine, and it's hand-picked, the best they've got.
Mm-hmm.
Then I take my table saw and I set it down 1 inch, and I make a groove inside of that thing and take a half-inch piece of marine plywood, cut it 2 inches on each piece that I made, and I laminate that thing together.
Mm-hmm.
I put that spline in there, put glue in it, and make one solid board.
Mm-hmm.
And I cut that on... the transom is cut on a 4x12 pitch on the flare of the stern. Then I make the what I call a master timber, and that's different. That varies different lengths, different size boats, but I make them all the same. They look exactly the same, and it's a stationary thing. It don't come out, that master timber. It just becomes part of the boat. I put that, and I put it on 6x12, which comes out to a 25-degree angle,
mm-hmm.
and a flare on it. But it varies back in the back, you know, once I set it up like you watched me the other day.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the first thing I do, and you come up the other day, I done had the bow stem put on.
Right.
That's the first piece that goes in. The two side boards, which are called the gunnel boards. Some call them that. I call them just side. I don't know the names of all that stuff. I'm like Bud Seymour. I just know where to put it. Don't know the names of
right.
it, but I know where they go and how to put it there. But I just believe God gave me the gift
mm-hmm.
and made the right timing and put me in the business to do it
mm-hmm.
at the right time. And it's way back yonder when I was thinking, is it going to be something else, or am I going to have to do this all the time, set on the side of this boat? And oyster and dig in the bottom, pick up something, carry it in, it vanishes. I don't see what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
I like to see what I've created.
Right.
People eat up what I do when I see food work, and I don't know where it goes.
Well, to have an expression of your own creativity and individuality, I think is great for anyone, whether it's building boats or working on cars or writing books or whatever you do, to have that kind of satisfaction mm-hmm. is wonderful. Can you tell me what materials you have in this boat?
I have half-inch marine. It's plywood that I use on this size of a boat. I don't use anything but half-inch from 20-foot up
mm-hmm.
marine plywood. I don't use anything but marine plywood, which is not as good as it used to be 15 years ago. I have juniper and cypress lumber in this boat. I prefer juniper if I can get it, because
mm-hmm.
it's light. It don't soak up water as bad. Cypress, the deadhead. Now, this is all deadhead lumber in this, except for the juniper. And except for the number 2 pine in the transom. I use hard pine there because of the being hard, the motors clamping on them, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I wished I could get something that was better than that, but it's not. You know, cypress just won't hold its strength on clamping motors to it with stern drive and outboard motor. But other than that, it's all marine plywood. Then I use exterior plywood for the false floorings and the decks and stuff like that
mm-hmm.
because the expense, you know, you got to change them. It's kind of senseless to use marine plywood on something you're going to walk out and wear out with oysters raking across.
Right. What is the keel made of?
It's made out of cypress. That's a 2x, that's a full 2x6 keel, and that thing is about 22 foot long.
Mm-hmm. And the timbers?
The timbers are 2x, starts off with 2x8s in the front mm-hmm. on the 25-foot boat, and they run out down to about 3.5 inches on the back. They vary 0.5 inch from the very first one, the master timber. That's an 8-inch V, on 8-inch timber starting off. The V is about 5.5, maybe 6 inches in it. It runs 0.5 inch back all the way, drops the timbers all the way 0.5 inch. Mm-hmm. Now this is the way that Charles Raffield and Mr. Lolly, I watched a lot of time when I was just a boy. Mm-hmm. And I guess I just carried on the tradition. Mr. Lolly and Mr. Henry Flowers, he built these type of boats, in which he's still here. Flowers and Son, Buford Flowers, his daddy.
Oh,
he has changed his style to another kind. Maybe you want to talk to him. It's a blunt nose boat,
mm-hmm.
Like a barge, like with V in the front.
Mm-hmm.
And he's changed his from this style to that, which he has changed over and made a pretty good boat out of it.
Hmm. What kind of fastenings do you use?
I use stainless steel ring nails, regular boat nails,
mm-hmm.
Different sizes. I use 2-inch, 1.5, 3-inch, and some sizes bigger.
Mm-hmm. And you were talking earlier about a glue that you use?
Well, originally we used Wellwood glue. Mr. Lolly, he never used nothing but Wellwood glue.
Mm-hmm.
When he left the wooden boats and went on over to the plywood boats, because originally he built them all out of cypress and juniper, and he never built any, but he's the one started building these boats out of plywood.
Hmm.
And he used Wellwood glue, which is a good glue, and it's lasted a long time, and I still recommend it's good, waterproof glue. Then I went in the wintertime on account of the temperature pressure differences.
Yep.
To epoxy glue, which is more expensive glue, and it is good in the wintertime. But this I'm using now is an Elmer's waterproof glue, which I've built 2 small boats and 1 15-foot boat, and I'm going to do this one out of it
mm-hmm.
because it has proved out to be good.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm curious about some of the names of the parts. You talked about the sides and the stern board. And the bow stem. What is that piece between the keel and the bow stem called?
Well, I don't really know what it is called. It's just it's another part of the keel. It's an extension out to make that semi V, and it's cut out of a 2x10. And you have to cut that thing to fit that keel, cut it to fit the bow. And it's for me knowing the name of that, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I just know it's got to be there.
Yeah. Do the individual timbers have particular names?
No. Then we have the sister kilts, the ones that come on this side, on between the gunnels and the main keel. We've got a 1.5x2 sister kilts, and it goes its notches down. Now this bottom is what they call a floating bottom.
Hmm.
It's not touching the timbers anywhere. Touches the keel, the sister kilts, and the gunnels. And the water is, the mm-hmm. timbers are made cut lower that the water will run freely all the way to the stern and run out the drain plugs back there. Because I use 1-inch drain plugs and mm-hmm. 2 of them in each boat. And then we have the uprights. What we call the upright is nailed on top of each one of these regular timbers that's in it.
Mm-hmm.
And then I cut what they call gussets. Now, my wife calls them jaggly things, but they're cut to tie these timbers, the main timbers together, which the old-timers call them gussets.
Hmm.
And they tie these timbers, and they're cut on an angle.
Yep. Excuse me just a minute. I got to turn this over.
Well, some people use them when we're preaching. But anyway, you have your bulkheads in them, and sometimes we put 2 bulkheads or 3 bulkheads in these boats. If they're crab boats, we put 3.
Mm-hmm.
If they're oyster boats, we put 2 bulkheads, and the one in the bow where the cabin goes. The crab boats, they have about a 12-inch deck around the sides, and they run out even at the stern. But now the oyster boats, they use about a 24 to 22-inch deck on the back. Runs out with what we call an apron, or a stern deck on the back.
Hmm.
And they have the cub board on them. And these are the different things. And you take a flounder boat now, it's different. You got a big bow deck that they can stand on and flounder. They're smaller. I mean, they usually flat bottom. Can't flounder one of these V-bottom boats. Hmm. You know, but these different, all different sizes, different things. But the best oyster boat, like I say, the best oyster boat to me, if I was going to oyster, I'd build me the old original flat bottom skiff that, in low wooded, low sides, that it wouldn't have to be in deep water, you know, you're a little closer to the water. These mm-hmm. boats are changed. These new modern, these people that come around here new now that want these boats, they don't understand. They want the things to look fancy.
Mm-hmm.
They wanted a little more high wooded in the stern, at which it runs about. These are cut 22 inches, which usually about 20 inches on the regular oyster boats is high enough for the ones that old oystermen. But now these are running around 26 to 28 inches on the stern regular oyster boat for these people. And they use them big old tongs way bigger than we've ever used. We use 14 teeth and 12 teeth. Now they're using 16 and 18s and right on up bigger than that.
Hmm.
And pulling them off of higher wooded boats. Now, you're talking about change.
Hmm.
I wouldn't do it.
Hmm. When you say it's higher wooded, you mean
the depth of the sides.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. When I call it, that's what we call a high wooded.
Uh-huh.
So you see, that's when you get the depth of the side, which is a 28-inch side on this boat here will run about 26, I imagine, because
mm-hmm.
I'm building it for my cousin, you know, and he knows a little, but he's going to use it for shrimping and oystering too,
mm-hmm.
and probably some other things.
Those flat-bottomed oyster skiffs you were talking about, what length would they be generally?
Most of them flat bottom skiffs on the oyster skiff run about 22 foot
mm-hmm.
and about 20 inches on the height on the stern.
How wide would they be?
About 5 foot and mm-hmm. a little wider,
mm-hmm.
five and a half and on the bottom.
Mm-hmm.
Now when you go to a boat and get the measurement, you say I want a boat 28 foot. Now that's the top width. I want it 6 foot on bottom. They never think about, they never mention the top width. It's always 28 foot on top, 6 foot on bottom.
6 foot on bottom meaning
the... That means the width of the bottom of it.
Uh-huh.
You see the top part of it, they're not worried so much of that. They want that width on that bottom so that make it more stable in the
mm-hmm.
water.
Mm-hmm.
And the length of it. So that makes the difference. And as far as them saying, I want one 28 foot on top and 10 feet wide on top, you don't ever hear that. Most of the time it's on the bottom width and the top length.
When they come to see you to order a boat, do they ask for any other things or give you any other information?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, well, that's where they're custom-built boats, and that's where I get most of my learning from, because other people, they're teaching me.
Mm-hmm.
And they come here and they say, well, we want this shape of a boat. We want a little bit difference on the width. We want our decks a little different. We would like to have our cabin a little bit different.
Mm-hmm.
And first, the boat sails, and they put the extras like buying a car or something. If you want air conditioners, you buy one mm-hmm. with air conditioning. You tell them we want this, you find one. And that's where it goes. Most of the people describe the boat to me, that's custom built. Same way with Bud or anybody else, a custom built boat. If it wasn't custom that way, it wouldn't be custom built.
Right. Do they describe it to you only in words?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Just in words, there's nothing wrote down.
Yeah.
They just put the picture of their picture in my mind and get me a picture of it. and I build it to their satisfaction.
Mm-hmm.
Don't take long, just a few minutes of telling me what they want. I can picture exactly what they want.
Hmm.
I've never had nobody complain yet.
Mm-hmm. How did your cousin describe to you what he wanted in this boat?
My cousin, see, I'd already built him one about 6, 8, 10 years ago, something like that. I don't mm-hmm. remember just the date. I got all the people I built boats for at 71, I've got them on a file in there.
Really? Yeah.
Names, addresses, the prices, everything is in there. So he just called me up and told me, he said, Bobby, I want a boat. He didn't ask me the price now. The boat, he paid 15 something for that boat. The boat's 1950 now, several years later. The materials changed. He said, I want a boat just exactly. Do you remember the boat that you built for him? I said, yeah, I remember that. He said, I want one just like it, but I want my decks a little wider, and I want a couple of changes on the cabin. The boat will be the same. So I'm just going by what I remember to build this boat. Mm-hmm. I don't got no plans. Because mm-hmm. all I can go back and see where the day I built it from the day he got it, mm-hmm. how much he made. That's all I've got. Mm-hmm. So it's been about, I guess it's probably been 8 years maybe, or maybe 10 mm-hmm. that I built that boat. But the only change that's on this boat that he don't know that I've done, that I've changed his, to his benefit, would be to put that little bit of rake in the stern to lift that bow, which mm-hmm. he said the other one was perfect, still don't leak a drop. I don't know. Mm-hmm. I just go by him. I let them do my advertising.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, I'm very interested in your master timber, did you call it? Or did you call it your master frame?
Master timber.
Master timber. Now, is that something that the other boat builders that you know about use too?
Right. Mr. Lolly had he started with that master timber, putting it in right up 64 inches back on the 25-foot boats. Now, his boat looked a little different than mine. I changed the size of my timbers, the size of the plywood. His plywood, he used 3/8, and he used 1-inch timbers. He thought it looked neater, and he wouldn't change. Mm-hmm. And they was a little weaker than my boat because he wouldn't change that. Them to when the big motors come. But now, first, the master timber, Charles Rathfield was the first one I heard talking about the master timber, because I borrowed that to put in that boat mm-hmm. that I built, that he cut out the frame, was his master timber, which he did not nail it in. Hmm. He told me to fasten it in there with clamps and don't use it. He wanted it back. Because he used it as a jig like, and he mm-hmm. set up all of his boats the same way. Now, mine, I cut them different, and I shape them different, and because I don't want it to stay. I may not leave it in the same place. Mm-hmm. I shape my boat with it mm-hmm. to put it there to shape that boat. Now, I put it in and clamp it, which you've seen there.
Right.
Then I put my transom in after I've got all the rest nailed together. Then I shape the boat with it.
Now, how did you get the shape for that particular master timber?
How I got the shape for that is it's just original. Mm-hmm. It's just the original way I did all of them. I used 6-on-12 pitch and a flare on it, and I cut it 15-degree angle where the sides runs around it. All of them are cut. Every boat I build is cut on that master timber where the sides run around at a 15-degree angle on it. Mm-hmm.
Do you save measurements to know to copy that?
No.
Next time, how do you know you're getting
just,
the same one?
I just save them on my mind.
Okay.
And I don't write down anything.
Mm-hmm.
It's in my mind. Mm-hmm. It's in there. Mm-hmm.
Now, I was asking you last time about these pencil marks on the side near where right. that master timber is.
Mm-hmm.
Can you explain again what that is all about and how you went about fitting that master timber?
Right, then I come back 64 inches from that, from the bottom of the chimes, and I mark that first one. I square it with the sides of the boat. I take my square and I square that off. I jump back 4 inches. I go forward 8 inches. When I go 4 inches, I make another straight edge, and I put that in there about a foot of it, and I clamp that master timber in there to. So that I can move it, and them lines, I don't have to draw lines and come back in there and try to square up when I'm moving that master timber. Mm-hmm. I've got it all squared. When I get ready to move it, I move it ahead maybe 4 inches, or maybe I might move it ahead just another inch and a half ahead.
Mm-hmm.
That way I have everything squared, as nothing gets out, and I level that boat with a level. Before I build anything, I'll level this whole boat, transom and all. Because if you don't level it, if you just put it up there and it's on level, whatever how you build it, that's going to set in the water.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you level that bottom up and put it on there level, and you set it, and it's going to set up there just like a coil.
Mm-hmm. Now, do you move that master timber around at all when you're setting it up?
I moved this one after you left the other day. Mm-hmm. I moved it ahead an inch and a half.
Mm-hmm.
I just moved it from one side of the line to the other, mm-hmm. and I had my shape.
Now, how do you know if the shape is right?
Because I pull it out there and look. I get out and look at it. I've looked at enough of these things. My daddy says I can see a quarter of an inch or an eighth of an inch, and he ain't never seen nothing like it. He don't never, because sometimes these boats, which I've set this boat up, and I've done checked it to square it,
mm-hmm.
I take my square, and I square this stern with this keel. I put it on both sides to see if it fits. Mm-hmm. If it goes in them corners right yonder in that transom with that keel, if it goes in there square, then I know that, and that keel is straight, then I know that boat is setting straight. It's not got to be pulling either way. Now, sometimes I get crooked keels, and the lumber wants to bend a little bit. You have one side of that wanting to bend a little easier than the other side, so it'll pull it crooked. Mm-hmm. Honkajaw, as I call it, it ain't square.
Yeah.
So I take a little eye boat and I screw it into the transom. I take another eye boat and I come to the other side, whichever side needs to be pulled back to straighten up. I put it in the master timber, mm-hmm, with the uprights on it, and I take a little turnbuckle and a chain, mm-hmm, and I take it and I just pull the thing till I get that square. In there, and I measure this keel and get it directly in the center. Every time I put it right directly in the center, every timber. And that's where I straighten it. Mm-hmm. But most of it is by eyesight, mm-hmm, to make sure that it's straight. If I can see anything that's not right, I move it. Before, mm-hmm, I move anything else, I change it. Mm-hmm.
What are the different types of boats that you build?
I build some little P-Rows. I call them little old John boats or something. I build some 6 foot. Mm-hmm. I call them P-Rows. They paddle out to the boats, and I built one last week for a Maxie Carroll. It was a 6.5 foot. The oystermans used to go out, and they're 30 inches on the bottom and 6.5 feet long, which is not very big. Anybody not used to working, they may not get in it. Mm-hmm. I build little bat toes, which some 12, some 10s. 14, 16 foot, and they're used for floundering, for brim fishing, and I build some V-bottom boats that are 15 foot for, you know, trout fishing and brim fishing and just sports around, and some of them crab boat. Now, last week I built a little whale boat, what they call a bird dog.
Hmm.
I believe you've seen that.
That blue one that was out here?
No. Did you see the little boat that was here?
I don't think so, no.
Maybe I built that white since you was here.
I think so, yeah.
I did. I built that. It didn't take just a few days. It was 15.5 foot. It was for some people in Panama City. Now, that was a little whale boat. That's the smallest one I built. It was 15 foot. I built up to 32 foot on the what they call the bird dogs. Mm-hmm. The South Florida people call them bird dogs. You recognize that name. I just call it a whale boat where the motor runs in the front. Now, that's for mullet fishing, for trout fishing, for sports fishing, too, as these people are going to do. And I build crab boats, and which they use them just primarily for crab boats. They're built strictly for that. And then I build a boat that they use for shrimping. It's what you call an oyster boat, a shrimp boat. It's a semi-commercial boat. We put a little cabin on the front with a little canopy on it and a little stern decks, and they put sometimes outboard motors. Most of the time they use stern drives in them, Merc Cruisers or OMCs, Volvos, whatever. Mm-hmm. And I have built some regular shrimp boats, plank boats, regular, you know, just plank them. Mm-hmm. Built one for Gerald Martina back in the 70s, which he still got it. It's a regular shrimp boat. Now, that's all he uses it for. And I built one 52-foot shrimp boat for Jesse Howard Milner, which we talked about the other day, mm-hmm, or a while ago. Mm-hmm. And it's named the Mamie Ellen. I built that about, I guess, 10 years ago.
That's the boat that's
done? One like Bud, yes.
In built Carabel?
The first one I've ever built, and the only one I've ever built that big. And mm-hmm, I guess it'll be my last. I don't think I'll ever build another one. I don't have no desire to.
Why is that?
Well, it took me so long to build a thing. It took me a year and a half to build it. Hmm. And it's just so much like Bud building the one you got the pictures to. It's just a lot of work there, and it's more than I can do anymore, and I don't want to do it. And building scaffolds around it, and can't get the right kind of help, and mm-hmm, you can't do it by yourself. The timbers are so big, you can't lug them around. Mm-hmm. So them's a particular type I build.
What's the usual building time for a boat like this one here?
On this boat, I take about 2 weeks, but generally about, I'd say, 8 days, mm-hmm, on this boat. If I really want to work at it, which I'm not going to work it hard no more. I'm going to take it easy now. I've gotten to the point that I don't owe that much money, and I've got my church, and I don't take them anymore like that, where I'll say I get it for you in 8 days. They have to wait on the church first. This is not first. My church and my congregation in this community, the welfare of these people, are first. And then the boats is probably last. My family is first. Then the church. Then this is my job.
Hello.
My job is probably, it's not the priority of my life. My family is, and then my church, you know, my family.
How many boats do you think you built over the years?
Let's see. I generally build about 20-something of them a year, about 23, 24, and I've been building about the last 15 years, and I built several before that. I can't remember how many. So you could, I imagine, measure the things up to several hundred, several hundred boats, you know. And they've all changed. They've varied. They've got better. My building skills are better, cuts and different shapes, and I take more pride in the way it looks than I did when I first started. I just wanted to produce it when I first started because it's such a great demand.
Right. In what ways are your boats different from other boats built by other fellas?
Well, I don't know so much the difference in this, maybe the style of it. Maybe the endurance of it in some ways. Maybe it's not as strong as some. I don't know, but I really hope is it's got more strength. I believe it's more durable and it looks better. That's what I hope it is. That's what I work towards, for it to look better, that it'd sail. And if it looks good and it does the job and lasts, then it's you've accomplished it. I believe that.
As far as the shape of it goes, the design of it, what's it take to have a good boat, do you think?
Well, the take to have a good boat is to keep, you know, have the right flare. That makes it stronger. To have the right V in it, the amount of the model of it, the V-bottom. And the structure of it, keep good solid timbers in it, good wood, good nails, good glue, and put it together right. Cut the timbers to fit, put everything in there, make sure the bottom, when you plane it down, it fits smooth and the glue fits and it, the wood and it sets, and put it together with good stuff, use good nails. And anybody that builds it needs to, if he's going to ride it, he needs to make it the best he can, if he's going to be the one riding that boat. So I put it together the way, just like I'd want it.
Right.
If I'm going to ride it, just like I'd be riding that boat day after day, and really I am. My whole livelihood, for as my occupation, is riding on what I do to that boat. If I satisfy that customer and it lasts, which this is the second one on him, I've built up to 6 boats and 7 boats for one individual.
Wow.
I mean, over the last 15 years, and because they're built right, and they can tell me changes they want to make that would make it better. I listen to them. And that's where I get my knowledge, you know, because if they're the one riding it. They know what's weak about it and what's not weak about it, and they tell me, and I can strengthen that part.
We were talking about change earlier with Mr. Lawley's boat, Mr. Raphael's boat. How did people react to the use of plywood after they were using plank boats?
Well, not too good. A lot of people today even talks, and even though it's made such a, it's got on, took a hold, there's still people today talking about it, using old cypress, you know, and old plank boats and put it together because it's much stronger, and they are. It just takes a little bit longer to build a boat, but now when they first started building, the first V-bottom that I built for, I built it for myself. I didn't know heel or beans about none of it. I just tried to build a thing, and I got some old green cypress, and I didn't realize that you got to dry that stuff. It's got to be dry, or it'll dry out while you're building it, then it'll open up, and you can't swell it back up, and you take 10 pounds of caulking cotton and use quarter-inch caulking to put it in there. And I built that and made a mess out of it. But it didn't catch on too good, plywood, not to start with. Everybody wanted the cypress boat, even Mr. Lawley. built a lot of Cypress boats after he had started building plywood boats because they just would not have it. Mm-hmm. They wanted that. And I've had people coming today saying, if you can find some good Cypress, hey, we'll take one of the boats. I say, I find good Cypress, takes so long to dry. It's all green. Now, this lumber that I put in there today is not dried. And you couldn't nail anything to that. You've got to nail it straight to each other. It's mm-hmm. fine using it. Now, my keel's dry, mm-hmm. and my chimes that I put in there, my knuckle boards, they call them, they're dry. You got to have dry lumber to nail that to. So I just pick out and save out lumber to dry on that over that account.
Mm-hmm. What was the style of planking that they used with the Cypress planks?
The style of planking, well, that usually runs about 1 inch by six. Cypress, you know, and it's planed really 7/8. It's not 1 inch. By the time they plane it, usually 3/4 to 7/8, you know, for that.
Yeah. Were they... Did the edges of the planks overlap?
No.
Edge to edge?
Charles Raffield showed me that to start with the little joiner I got right yonder. He had one of the things. And what I did on that is he put a little bevel on every board he put on it, not put it flush up.
Mm-hmm.
He took his little joiner and he set that thing up, which this is where I learned it from, mm-hmm. on the plank boat. What I did on that boat, I came down here and cut every one of my planks around on that flat bottom skiff, which it was a crossways boat bottom, not a lengthways on that flat bottom. You put them crossways.
Mm-hmm.
And I took them back to him. I had to borrow a skill saw that first boat I built. I borrowed a skill saw and a square and a hammer from Mr. Lewis Higgs to build that first boat I built. And I carried my lumber back down to Charles Raffield, to his joiner, and he put a little bevel on that board. And I took all them boards and marked them, brought them back, turned the flat where it touched inside on the bottom, put the little out edge, it was a little gap outside, mm-hmm. to keep them boards from buckling, what
mm-hmm.
he said.
Mm-hmm.
It had swelling. They could swell without buckling the board.
Yeah.
You know, understand?
Mm-hmm.
So there was a technique to that, too. Mm. And Charles Raffield showed me that. To splice this plywood together, laminate it, Mr. Lawley showed me that. And, you know, the way he did it. Of course, I do it different than him. I use a more modern technique than what he did. He never left the old hand plane. He never went to electric plane. He did use a skill saw occasionally. Most of the time, his was hand saw. He used his hand saws, his old equipment that he used. He never did go to the old power saws. A little saber saw he did use.
Mm-hmm.
But the rest of it in an old-timey table saw that he had that was all put together by him, and it was over the years, and I've seen that. So there is a technique to putting the bottom on a Cypress. If you don't put it right, you're going to buckle the board. You got to nail them right, put the right kind of fasteners in there.
Were those planks caulked too? Did you put anything between
them? No caulking. The last boat I built, which was that big boat, I put it together, and it's the main area, and there's no caulking. It's just very little chinking that my daddy did on certain boards. It was not, didn't swell as quick as it should have before we put it over, which would run water in it. Mm-hmm. And daddy chinked them up a little bit for him.
Mm-hmm.
But far as that, there's no caulking in them. Mm-hmm. That was the old style. Now, they used to do that back when they built them old boats over there, the D-mowers. You've heard of them probably since you've been here. The D-mowers and them Greets, they built them boats. They put a caulking seam in it. That they might, before they ever put it over, they caulked that boat. Which, that to me, that was senseless. But they didn't understand. They thought you were supposed to caulk them all.
Mm-hmm.
I don't put no caulking on no boat. Mm-hmm. If I got to caulk it to float it, then I don't want to be on it.
Mm-hmm.
That mess will come out.
Mm-hmm. Now, with the boat as we see it here today, what will you do next?
What I'll do next is go ahead and finish fastening this keel. I'll nail it down. Then I'll plane this keel off and these chimes to fit. I'll take a little board, I'll take my electric plane and rough it in. Then I'll go back with my hand plane, and I'll fit it smooth all the way back and put my little timbers in there, my little sister Kilsons. I'll put them in, cut my bottom out, nail it on.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll have that done by tomorrow evening.
Mm-hmm.
If, you know, nothing don't change and nothing don't happen.
Okay. Do you finish the boats? Do you paint them?
I don't paint no boat.
Yeah.
And I complete the boat, complete everything but painting. Mm-hmm. Some I don't complete. Some I just build a hub for people. Mm-hmm. You know, but most of the boats I complete them without paint. Mm-hmm. But I don't paint no boat.
Looking around your shop and noticing the tools, of course, but I notice in a couple of locations, like over there next to your pipe clamps, mm-hmm. there are some things that look like maybe they're patterns.
They are. Now, them are. The only pattern I have is what you asked me about that while ago, that bow piece.
Oh, yeah.
They don't fit. They're not the run that I use. Mm-hmm. The two end cuts is what I got patterns for, to fit that timber over that bow nose comb. I guess you'd call it that. It goes in that semi-V. I've got for three or four different types of boats there that I got the cut on once I made the cut. Mm-hmm. And I said, well, I'll use these ends. There ain't no use me trying to figure this thing out again. So I did use them. Mm-hmm. They're, that locks that bow and that keel together on them things.
Mm-hmm. And what's this right over your head here?
This is another piece just like that over there that Corky Richards built. It's for a little 14-foot like a Carter craft or a speed hull. I built one of them.
Oh, yeah.
Now, I gave him the measurements on how to build the rest of it, and he cut this out of a piece of plywood here and gave it back to me. That was the piece I had never cut. Mm-hmm. I never had put that. Corky Richards, I don't know, you've heard of him.
Yes, I have, yeah.
He's a friend of mine and built a few boats, but he's basically a cabinet maker. Mm-hmm. But he can figure any kind of piece of wood.
Are there, let's see, we've talked about Bud Seymour and Mr. Flowers. Are there other people who build boats around here?
The other person that I know that did it for a living, oh, there's plenty of people that build them, you know, that Luther Hatfield. He has built a lot of boats, which he's not doing it right now. He's kind of contracting business for housing. But he's one he asked me to build the first boat for him, how they got into it. I was building that Mamie Ellen, that big shrimp boat, and had other boats this, and I couldn't get to it. They came and asked me to build a boat, and I couldn't get to it. So they said, believe, we believe. And I cut the bow stem out for them. Mm-hmm. And they went back and built, him and his brother Larry, built the first boat. And from there, they began to get one here and one there till they got in the business mm-hmm. of building them. And then you got the Jones boys, which one... Horace Jones was a good boat builder, which I watched when I was a boy. Mr. Harrison Jones, but both of these people have passed away. Mm-hmm. Aubrey Jones, he built lots of boats. His place is right behind mine, which he's out of business now. His health is bad. Mm-hmm. And there's a couple of old boats laying around that he started. They're old boat builders that was here when I was just a kid. Mm-hmm. Punkin Whitten built me my first boat when I was just a little old boy. And he don't build boats, he's a car painter now. Mm-hmm. I see another few people around about building them, and my Uncle Jesse Polis.
Oh, yeah.
Lemmy, he's an Italian. He built.
Is that Sonny?
No, Sonny is his nephew.
Oh, yeah.
His daddy's a boat builder, Mr. Willie mm-hmm. Polis. Now, he's a good boat builder. He built a different type, and probably the strongest boat that I've ever seen. Mr. Willie Polis, he puts his... Oh, he puts a lot into them. Mm-hmm. He really makes a strong boat. Mm-hmm. And Mr. Brannon, he built a lot of boats. He's passed away. Mr. H.G. Brannon, he built one boat, and he's passed away. But there's a lot of different people you get to thinking about them, which mm-hmm. is a long time back that I can't remember all of them. Yeah. And the Sigrys, they built a lot of boats. Mr. Gad Sigrid and Wilbur Creamer, which passed away. And that's George Creamer's daddy. He's a postmaster.
End of tape one, continued on tape two.